What would have to happen? What is theoretically could trigger this next strike of something that goes into a Western country?
It's already triggered. The decisions have been made. So it's now just a question of timing, meaning, you know, what the Russians are looking at now is when they initiate this action, and I believe they will initiate this action, are they prepared for the follow-up? Let me put some other things in perspective, too. When the conflict started, the size of the Russian military is 900,000 men. Sometime in 2023, Russia increased the size of their military to 1.6 million. Now that's, 700,000. So people, talk about Russian defense industry. The Russians aren't just building weapons for the war, which is a war of attrition, chewing through material, but they're doing it to, build up a 700,000 man expansion of the military. That's why I laugh when the Germans are like, we're going to build a 300,000 man army. Boy, the Russians are really scared about that. But then the Russians have now gone even further, 2.2 million. Now, you know this, Colonel, when you have a soldier, that soldier needs infrastructure, that soldier needs equipment. You need not just the basic loadout, but you need all the ammunition backed up to support any contingency. Russia has been building this. People are so ignorant about Russia right now because they focus on what's going on in the special military operation, not understanding that right across from the Finnish border in the St. Petersburg military district, which is new, there's a 70,000 strong Russian army corps that has been built from scratch, that is fully equipped and fully prepared to wage war against NATO. NATO is not prepared to do that. The Russians have built up additional forces. The Russians have been expanding their military and building the logistical sustainability for this military while they're fighting this major war. So the Russians have defeated us hands down in the defense industry standpoint. So Russia's ready, but there are economic considerations. Vladimir Putin is a strategic thinker. You don't initiate something until you have made sure that all your ducks are in order. So when the Russians get all their ducks in order, and there are a lot of meetings taking place in Russia right now, Russia will do what it needs to do unless there is a change of behavior on the part of Europe. The one thing that the Russians recognize is that none of the leaders who today are articulating this aggressive stance have a political future. Merz is not going to win the next parliamentarian election. Macron is on his way out in 2027, could leave sooner. Keir Starmer is a joke. His party just collapsed. The polls are talking about removing him right now. And none of the militaries work. The British have said, we can't buy any new equipment until 2030. We don't have anything. So forget the British military. They've always been a joke. You could fill a modern soccer stadium. We're getting ready for the World Cup. One of these stadiums, we're going to host a game. You could put the entire British military inside it and still have 30,000 unsold seats. So they're a joke. Forget about the Brits. The French, they can't deploy more than 7,000 troops at once, and they don't have the airlift capacity, and they have no logistic sustainability. So they're a joke, and they can't build up because they have an economy that doesn't function. This is why their governments have collapsed repeatedly because of budgetary issues. And you're suddenly going to say that they're going to sacrifice pensions and other worker compensation to build up a military for a war that doesn't need to exist. So they're done. And then we have the Germans. They put 111 billion euro into a military replenishment fund, and they can't say what they built with it. 111 billion euro went into this replenishment fund in 2022, and they've got nothing to show for it because their military is so broken, so fundamentally broken, that it's just a money pit. And they could just pour money in. The Germans can't do anything. They mobilized this brigade going to Lithuania. Always a bad idea to have a German brigade in Lithuania going up against the Russians. But hey, I'm just a historian. What do I know? They can't.
You can also count.
This brigade, 5,000, but it's not even a full. There's three battalions in this brigade. One of those battalions is a mixed NATO battalion. And then there's two. There's a German armored battalion and a German armored infantry battalion. They don't have vehicles for these battalions. And the German industry can't build these vehicles because German steelworks can't produce the armor because they can't afford the gas. They're shut down. So the Germans have to buy the steel plate from the Swedes. But everybody right now is looking to buy the steel plate from the Swedes. So there's a backlog. This is the state of reality that Europe can do nothing right now.
Okay, so let me ask you a follow-on question. What you're saying so far is profound. This is earth-shattering, and nobody is talking about this. The logic is very sound, but I've not heard anybody say that basically the decision has been made. They're just looking for the execution unless there's a change on the Western side. That is that was the second question I was going to ask too, because if now I am putting on my Western military hat and I'm going to say, okay, looking at reality, as you just said here on the ground, we have spent the last 4+ years getting tens of thousands of combat vehicles and other kinds of equipment to Ukraine. They have expended thousands upon thousands of long-range missiles. I mean, you name it. Interceptor missiles just in the huge numbers. And then, of course, now then here we've just blown up through another huge portion in Iran. And so the United States has burned for those. So we got nothing left to give to our European allies. They don't have enough. They can't. Their industrial capacity can't build squat. So if Russia does what you say, our hands are empty. There's almost nothing we can do unless we want to get foolish and say, no, we are going to fire some missiles back and hit something inside of Russia, which would then, I think, elevate the thoughts of Karaganov and his kind of folks, too. This is a really, really dangerous place here. How do you see it playing out?
Well, it's very dangerous. Let me just, again, if you want, let's just talk numbers. The Russians have built a Shahid factory outside of Kazan. That, yeah, Shahid is the Shahid 136, the triangular shaped Delta drone that's ubiquitous. I shouldn't use big words when I can't say it right. My brain was saying it, my mouth was stumbling. It's used a lot. That's how a Marine speaks. They use a lot of them. The production capacity of that a couple years ago was 1,000 a day. The maximum usage of the drones up until that time, the Russians were using 250, 300 a day. That means that Russia was stockpiling 750, 700 of these a day. Now the size of that facility has tripled and they're producing not just 136s, but they're building, new jet versions. The Geron is what's called the Geranium. They have the Geranium 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Now the 6, which is basically a V2 looking rocket. And the Russians are just pumping these things out. They're stockpiling them. The Russians just showed the other day that they can saturate Ukraine's airspace, 1,500 launched in a day. They can expand that launch capacity. They can darken the skies of Europe, and Europe has no air defense. I'll just say that one more time. Europe has no air defense. There's no air defense in Europe today. The Germans know this. They said, what can we do to stop a Russian attack on Germany? The answer is nothing. There's nothing you can do because you have nothing. You literally have no air defense capacity. Russia can darken the skies of Europe with drones. Again, if they want to put 3,000 drones over Europe a day, and I just told you what their capacity. They've been, bankrolling 700 a day. So in 10 days, that's 7,000. In a month, that's 21,000. It's now been a couple years. So the Russians will be able to sustain a 3,000 drone a day attack against a continent that can't defend itself for several months, meaning they will literally flatten everything. There's nothing Europe can do. Now we bring to bear the fact that the Oreshnik and other long-range missiles, because the United States, in our stupidity, have withdrawn from the INF Treaty, and now the Russians have taken action. It's not just the Oreshnik they have. They have an Oreshnik 2.0 that nobody's talking right now, which is an improvement on the Oreshnik. They have the Iskander K, which is a long-range cruise missile variant of the Iskander missile. So Russia will be able to fire hundreds of these a day into strategic targets, aircraft, bunkers, etc. Europe is defenseless. There's nothing Europe can do to defend itself. This is my way of telling the Europeans, shut up. You will lose. You've got nothing. You have no capacity to counter this. The Americans didn't have enough. Even if we had saved all our weapons, we can't match the Russians strike for strike. And today we've got nothing. Listen to what they say in Congress. We have depleted our long-range standoff weapons. Europe has no capacity for long-range standoff weapons. And even if they did, they can't survive the repeated strikes that'll come in and destroy the infrastructure necessary to deploy this capacity. So it's game, set, match. The Russians have already won this war. What needs to happen now is for Europe to recognize this reality and recognize the stupidity of literally trying to push towards a war.
So two questions. First, what do you say to those people who say Russia would never actually do that. They're not going to cross line because they know we've got Article 5 and we've got nuclear weapons. And if they started down this path, then it's going to be nuclear Armageddon and they're going to lose. So they would never do that. What do you say to that?
Are you trying to tell me that the United States has made the decision to use nuclear weapons preemptively in a non-nuclear environment?
No. I'm saying they wouldn't even launch these clouds of UAVs and drones because they know the Russians, they know that we would then reply with nuclear weapons. So they would never advance that big.
We wouldn't reply with nuclear weapons. We've already said we wouldn't reply with nuclear weapons. In fact, during the Biden administration, we said if Russia used a nuclear weapon against Ukraine, we would respond non-nuclear. With long-range standoff weapons, which we no longer have, by the way. So we're not going to respond with nuclear weapons. If Russia launches a conventional attack against Europe, we'd have to respond conventionally, and we lack it right now. And there's no way Europe's going to commit suicide. What is Europe going to do? Could you imagine the decision-making, discussion in Paris? Oh, Mr. President, I can't use a French accent, so I won't try. But France wins. But something you don't hear every day. Cheers. But they launch a drone attack against Germany. Now the French meet. They say, what weapons do they use? A bunch of Shahids, a couple of Reshniks. What's our response? What are you going to launch a couple nukes from a submarine? Mr. President, the moment the submarine launches, the Russians are going to hit us with 2% of their nuclear arsenal and all of France will disappear. Because that's the discussion that will be had in London, in Paris, anywhere. The second we respond with something that looks like a nuclear weapon, the Russians have said we won't be the first to launch, but we're not going to be the first to receive, meaning that if the Russians detect a launch, the Russians will respond with everything they have. So now put yourself in a French decision maker. You're going to make that call? Well, especially if somebody in your intelligence says, well, this German sort of asked for it, boss. You know, we've been warning you about the consequences of building weapons for the Ukrainians and giving it to the Ukrainians and giving intelligence that the Russians aren't going to sit there and take that all day. So Russia has responded with conventional weapons. We have no ability to respond conventionally. What do we do, Mr. President? You want to commit suicide? You want to fire a nuke against Russia and Russia will kill everybody here and in all of Europe? Do you want that, Mr. President? And the answer is no. Europe will do nothing and the Russians know they will do nothing. Want to know why the Russians know they will do nothing? Because Russian intelligence is pretty damn good. And if you don't think the Russians have literally recruited people on the inside of the decision-making cycles in a completely broken up France. France is the easiest place to recruit a politician nowadays because they have political dissension everywhere. England's the second easiest place to recruit. Germany, Russia owns Germany in terms of inside decision making. Russia has intelligence operatives throughout Europe and they know exactly what Europe's thinking. And so I don't think the Russians, I think Vladimir Putin is a very well-informed national leader who has been very pragmatic for a reason. There's a reason why he hasn't been seeking to expand this conflict because he's been confident in the outcome. But now Europe has crossed red lines. Europe has empowered Ukraine to bring real harm to Russia. So Russia is going to take Ukraine off the playing field and punish Europe because Russia can't sit back and allow Europe to believe that they can build up a military capable of fighting Russia by 2029, 2030. I think the decision's already been made.
And has anybody in Russia, even if it's bloggers or anybody else, has said this publicly, that it's basically the red line has been crossed? It's now only a matter of timing before something gets struck in Europe?
I don't think people in Russia dare speak on behalf of Vladimir Putin. This is a decision only Vladimir Putin can make. There are people that say there's a need to do this, but nobody's going to be speaking about policy decisions. That's just the way Russia.
And so what leads you to make this confident assertion? Because it's earth shattering.
Because I've been studying Russia for my entire adult life. And I know a couple things about the Russians that for Russians, words matter. Everything the Russians say matter. Every word counts. Russians don't use word lightly, especially Russians in government service. And as you pointed out, there is a marked change in the tone of Russian leadership. And I'm not a fluent Russian speaker. I butcher Russian almost as bad as I butcher the English language. But I know some people who are. Ray McGovern, who I believe you know very well, is a very seasoned Russian analyst who speaks the Russian language fluently. And he not only picks up on the interpretation that I read, the translations, but the exact Russian words. You know, Russians can use different words to say the same thing, and the words they use bring about a different meaning. And Ray McGovern has been listening to the words being used by the Russians, and their very specific language. And I think the Russians have tightened their language, tightened their messaging. But the problem is the West, we don't have people educated enough to understand the messaging that Russia's putting out there. But by reading this, again, I'm not bragging, but, you know, I've done connect the dot predictive analysis my entire adult life. And I've got the vast majority of things right. And where I've gotten it wrong, it's just because certain, you know, for instance, I like reading your comments. Ritter, you said they were going to take Kiev in 3 days. I actually said 7 days. But I happen to match the assessment of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the director of the CIA, who all believed that when Russia crossed the border, Russia was going in for the kill, that this was a full-scale military invasion. I was wrong. Nobody predicted the special military operation. There's not a single person out there that says, I knew it was a special military operation. And when Russia announced it was a special military operation, none of these people said, I know what that means. Nobody knows what it means. And ever since then, we've been assessing the situation based upon an incomplete set of facts. But one thing I've been consistent on, Russia's going to win this war. Russia will not lose this war. NATO does not have the capacity to defeat Russia, and Ukraine doesn't have the capacity to survive a war of attrition against Russia. Now we're seeing it play out. NATO wanted to change the paradigm by playing stupid games. It's an MI6-driven operation, but now they're going to pay the price. I've listened to the Russians. As I said, I was at the Russian embassy on May 7th, the day they celebrated Victory Day. I listened to the speech. I listened to the videos. I listened to the officers. And I walked away saying, this is a completely different atmosphere. It's a darker atmosphere. It's an atmosphere that is preparing for war, not preparing for peace.
Yeah, we had actually John Mearsheimer on our show yesterday come to that same conclusion. He thinks something is coming that we're just psychologically not prepared for. So maybe the most important question I've asked you in this whole show, is there anything that the West can do to sober up and can change the outcome so that we don't get into that war, or is it too late?
There is one thing that can do. Europe has to stop this nonsense. Right now, Europe needs to do a complete reevaluation of where they are realistically. And there's a way you can do it to save face. They can say that the energy security paradigm has shifted so much that Europe has to take a look at preserving their own inherent industrial capacity by regaining access to reliable supplies of energy. And as long as the Strait of Hormuz can be constricted by Iran at any point in time, Europe needs to recognize that the United States lacks the capacity to provide Europe with energy on a sustainable and affordable basis. The only nation that can do that is Russia. So Europe is going to have to reevaluate its energy relationship with Russia. And once you do that, you have to recognize, therefore, that Russia has to become a strategic partner of economic growth as opposed to the strategic enemy that they posit. And when you make that decision, you can de-emphasize the military. They need to stop talking the rhetoric. NATO needs to go away, or at least become realistic. But this concept that NATO is somehow the equivalent of Russia and that Europe can replace the United States and build this military up, irresponsible thought. But the way you act on that, you know, because you say actions speak louder than words. Ukraine, Europe needs to bring an end to this war. Europe needs to recognize that the Ukraine gambit, and let's just remember that Europe and the United States created the conditions for this war. People don't understand the history. You don't understand that the CIA has been using Western Ukrainians as a foil against Soviet Union Russia since 1948. You may know this, but the U.S. Special Forces had a plan in the 1950s of turning Ukraine into a irregular warfare ground that Special Forces groups were going to parachute in and create, teams to fight against the Russians. That was our plan. We'd always be planning to use Ukraine against Russia to foil. And, you know, Europe has acted on that. We've acted on that. We need to stop. We need to cease and desist. People don't know what happened in 2004 when the CIA, together with others, orchestrated a coup. The first coup against Viktor Yanukovych, the so-called Orange Revolution, where we had three presidential elections. Yanukovych won the first two. We wouldn't allow that to happen, so we orchestrated a illegal third election and got the candidate in. Yushchenko, who turned out to be a nationalist, the first thing he did is make Stepan Bandera the national hero of Ukraine, a Nazi, the national hero of Ukraine. You understand the direction? Well, in 2010, we tried it again, but Yanukovych came back. So in 2014, we did the coup de grace, the final coup to remove Yanukovych, put the nationalists in charge, and begin the process of transforming Ukraine into a sword into the belly of Russia. We started this war. The United States, Europe, Russia's going to finish this war. Russia's done, and Europe and the United States need to basically say, it's over, the Ukraine gambit is finished, and we're going to be walking away from this conflict, recognizing Russia's not only victory, but inherent right. I got too excited and I burned my throat out. inherent right to dictate, the role that Ukraine plays. Russia doesn't want to destroy Ukraine. Look at the relationship between Russia and Belarus. It's premised on equality. People out there, Google it. The Union State. The Union State is a political, economic relationship between Belarus and Russia. I've been to Belarus recently. I've spoken to Belarus. They don't feel like they're an occupied power, a subjugated power. They're independent, proud, independent nation that has a relationship with Russia that's based upon friendship. They talk about the three sisters. That's Belarus, Russia, and Ukraine. And so the vision of Russia isn't to punish Ukraine, occupy Ukraine, destroy Ukraine. The vision of Russia is to bring Ukraine into the three sisters where it belongs. Ukraine is not a European country. Ukraine is a Eurasian country, forever historically and culturally linked to Russia. And that's where the Russians want to go with this. And the West basically needs to say, yeah, that's what's going to happen. If they don't, if they want to continue to play the Ukraine card to the last Ukrainian, they're going to find that they're going
to
pay.
You know, Scott, what is so painful to acknowledge is that up until, I think, February the 20th, 2014, Ukraine was an entire whole entity that Russia was willing to do business with in its form indefinitely. I've had some played interviews with Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister, who has said, yeah, we were even after the Maidan issue, he said Russia was willing to have a negotiation for new elections and we would abide by whatever that came out and we would still have relations with them. Were the Sevastopol down there in Crimea would have stayed part of Ukraine. But because of the actions that we took, we just destroyed all that. And now then years later, the final bitter victory, if what you've described, if Russians are going to do what you suggest that they will or what you assess that they're going to, we will have sacrificed the entire political independence of the country just because of our arrogance and our desire to try and make it something else.
What people don't realize is even after Russia started the special military operation, even after they created the land bridge that connected Crimea to the Donbass and onto Russia, the peace settlement that Russia was agreeing to in the Istanbul communique returned Kherson and Zaporizhia to Ukraine. All the Russians were looking for is that the referendum of the Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republic be respected by Ukraine, that they were independent states. And then what Russia said is that let them be independent. Then they get to make a decision. Do they want to stay independent? Do they want to go back to Ukraine? Do they want to be part of Russia? But, Russia wasn't trying to force the situation. The referendum of September 2022 only came after the United States and NATO injected $50 to $60 billion of military equipment, retrained a defeated Ukrainian army, and infused it with tens of thousands of Western-trained mercenaries, and launched a surprise attack against the Russians at the time that the Russians were starting to withdraw their troops in accordance with the Istanbul communique. The Russians weren't looking for this outcome. They didn't go to war to have this outcome. This outcome is a cause-effect relationship between bad decisions made by Ukraine and the West.
Well, we'll have to wait and see how it works out. I've never hoped that somebody is more wrong than I hope that you're wrong about what could come next, because, the parameters of life that we all have come to just accept it at face value will radically change. And I don't think anybody's prepared for that in the West. A lot of things are going to change. And
I agree with you.
Unfortunately, I also cannot simultaneously say, so I hope Russia just doesn't do anything and they just continue to let NATO do what they're doing, because that's not sustainable either. No. This is not sustainable, is the bottom line.
But, you know, Colonel, if we had had a talk this time last year about the stupidity of America launching an attack against Iran, we would have said, well, it's unimaginable America would do that because of the consequences. Yeah. Well, here we are living with the consequences. We live in a world where the unimaginable has become the reality because of the stupidity of Western policymakers.